It's now time for Sports Saturday.
Are you serious, really?
On 101.3, The Game.
I know football.
Sports Saturday is powered in part by Green City Garage, an environmentally responsible garage in South Burlington, working on all makes and models and specializing in your family's car, truck, or SUV. Vermont Engine Service, an engine and machine shop, 16 Krupp Drive in Williston. Vermont Mortgage Company, mortgage expertise dedicated to Vermonters. See how easy obtaining a mortgage can be. And Romanto's Pizza, delivering to a 10-mile radius of their Taft Corners, Williston location. This is Sports Saturday.
Yet another missed tackle.
Living the dream and taking you with us. 101.3, The Game.
Oh, he is right. We are living the dream and taking you with us. Good morning. It's Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game and 101.3thegame.com, or you can hear us live on our app and the 101.3 The Game app. I'm your host, Jeff Paul. I've been out for 2 weeks. I've been missing this. Saturday I've been away, I've been missing this, and now I'm back in the seat. I'm excited to get to work with my boy, Austin Danforth.
Even on vacation, you're missing it?
Oh, yeah, I always miss it. You know, it's the thing that was bugging me, too, is my app wasn't working while I was away. I tried to listen to the show a couple times just to see what's going on up here, but I couldn't even listen to the show, so I got in the pool instead.
your fallback plan was pretty good.
It was pretty good.
Feels so bad for you.
And you, man, I mean, you were out the week before I left for vacation. Yeah. You were on your awesome trip.
Yeah, it's been a minute.
It's been a while. Yeah. I mean, you know, you've got your facial hair is a little bit more. Your hair is a little bit longer. You look a little more ragged because you're working so hard. This is your time of year, Austin.
Yeah, man. Oh, it's I'm feeling old this week.
It's tough, man. You got a lot to cover.
Everything I'm feeling. I tried to squeeze in a round of golf on Thursday.
Well, of course.
That kicked my butt.
Yeah, and this is busy time for you. The playoff time is go time for anybody that's writing sports in this area.
Yeah, that last week of May into this week and next week, you go from marathon week, which is a long week cap it with an early Sunday before Memorial Day. Then you get into the first week of playoffs, next week's playoffs, championships, and then we get the freedom of summer.
I know. I just want the weather to change. I will get into my vacation in a second, but I was in Florida and Nashville, Tennessee. So the duration of my time away was 12 days.
You're looking tan.
I didn't see one cloud. I didn't feel one drop of rain. The temperature never got below 92 degrees and there was low humidity. If anyone's been to Florida in May, you know there's humidity. For the first time in the history of me being in Florida, in the state of Florida in May, there was no humidity. I mean, it was the perfect weather for the every minute day I was gone. But as soon as I got off, of course, when I flew into Burlington last Saturday night, late at night, there was a raging thunderstorm and it was pouring so bad that they didn't let anybody out to hook, they got to bring the airplane in to put it onto the the hookup thing so you can walk out of the airplane. We had to wait in the airplane for 15 minutes because it was raining too hard for anyone to come out to do that. That's how bad it was when we landed at Burlington.
Wow. Welcome home.
But welcome home to me. If you want to join the conversation today, give us a buzz today, 802-655-6672, or you can text us on the Town Fair Tire text line, 802-655-6672. Aaron Wells, our producer, well done with the sports update this morning, young man. Nice meetings you and I have had this week. I'm really excited about where we're going this year with this summer now that you're back from college. Congratulations on your first year.
Thank you very much. Big plans for the summer.
Yeah, big plans for the summer.
When do I find out?
Well, we'll tell you later. it was a quick conversation, but definitely there's some good things that are going to happen here, Austin. We're going to talk about that as well. But now that, the boy's back from college, we can have a little bit more dialogue, and then we're not talking from long distances, and it'll be much better. So we're excited about that. But about our trip, I mean, obviously you were in Scotland playing in some, I mean, just if you're a big-time golfer like you are, Austin, I mean, what a dream trip that's got to be.
And also, I couldn't ask for better weather. Like, it was like...
So, but better weather for that is what are we talking, mid-50s and not raining?
I mean, I could have asked for warmer, but it didn't rain.
No
like,
way.
It rained one day for like 2 hours while I took a nap. It rained a few times while I was on the road. Like, we were driving from one place to another, so not time we'd planned to be outside.
Don't you feel like you're kind of missing something though if it's not raining?
I got a taste of it. I was telling you about the morning I was playing the course across the street from a hotel we were staying at. I get to the farthest point away from the hotel, the ninth green. It had been sprinkling. The sprinkle became hail.
Yikes.
There was sun in the distance. The wind was blowing. So, like, I got like
being here.
Yeah. I was like, okay, I got Scotland in the span of like 250 yards. And I was like, okay, this can stop. It rained a little longer, but I got out of it okay.
And this is when you were driving to wherever you were going, right? This wasn't like on the fifth hole of a golf.
No, this was the one time we played, or I played, and it was sort of like semi like Scottish.
Yeah.
This was like 7:30 in the morning. I was playing by myself on this course called Cullen. And I was at the furthest point from where I could like get back undercover.
And you just got to own it.
Yep.
You just got to do it.
I was putting my Patagonia down jacket on and off like I was a pitcher between innings. Like when I'd have to step up and swing, I'd take it off, set it on my bag, swing, put it back on.
And let me get a question. Is in your mind, are you thinking, I don't think the heavy stuff's coming down for a while?
That thought always crosses your mind at one point.
Whenever it rains, that always goes through my mind.
But I was also like, this is cool. I'm playing golf on the North Sea on a course by myself at 7:30 in the morning. I don't wake up at 7:30 to do anything.
Then there's no question about that. I can barely get you to show up here at 10 o'clock in the morning on Saturday mornings and your days off. And I have to say that my vacation is much more maligned than yours. I mean, yours is like you're going to Scotland. You're playing some of the greatest golf courses in the world. Yeah. You're experiencing hail and rain and sun at the same time. You're in the middle of a Scottish golf course by yourself on the fifth hole. You know, you're thinking about putting your jacket on. Your jacket's coming off like you're warming up in the bullpen. And I just went to Florida for a few days. And then I went to Nashville, Tennessee, which is one of the greatest cities I have ever been to in the state in the country is Nashville, Tennessee.
I've never been.
I'm going to tell you, anyone that hasn't been to Nashville, you're really doing yourself a disservice. What an amazing city that is. It's the smallest, biggest city I've ever been in, number one. It's like you're downtown. So if you watch the NFL draft, that's where the NFL draft was. So Broadway, where all the clubs and the bar, I mean, just the shows, it's insane. I mean, I'm not very good at taking pictures and posting them. Like my wife is Snapchatting and my friends that are with us are Snapchatting everything. And I don't get that. And I'm not very good I'm very average at Twitter. Anyone that follows me knows I'm very average at Twitter.
Average and improving.
I'm trying. I'm doing the at things. You know, so I'm starting to get that.
I'm getting that
pretty well. I don't have any idea what I'm doing with Instagram, so I don't even do that anymore. I'm pretty good at Facebook, but I don't take a lot of pictures. But man, what a city it is. It's so cool that everything is just right there, okay? So all the places you want to visit are there. The football stadium where the Titans play, which isn't like an amazing stadium, but it's a cute little stadium. And I would have loved to have been there when the place was packed because you can kind of see in it.
Yep.
So I just can't imagine the atmosphere. Eric Church, who's a big-time country singer, I guess, was getting ready to do a show on Saturday. And we were going to be out of Nashville by Saturday. So, but on Thursday night, they had these scooters all over the town. So you get these at the Lyft app and you can just ride these scooters around.
Like electric scooters?
Electric scooters, yeah. Which I want to buy one now and go everywhere on.
I did that in Santa Monica, California.
Are they
a year
not
ago.
The best way to get around?
It's incredibly dangerous if you overthink it.
But there's no question about it.
It is so much fun.
Oh, so much fun. And we got, I mean, it was 95 degrees. You know, we're at it where there's a lot of people. So, you know, the night before when we got there, we were a little under the weather the next day. I'm not going to lie about that. I did not feel like walking around a city that I wanted to see 1,000 things. My wife is a big Kristen Cavallari fan, you know, Barry Cavallari and Jay Cutler. Yep. She has a store down the road. She wanted to go there, and that was like 4 miles away. I'm like, get the scooter, sister. We're going to scooter it over. But we put about 20 miles on these scooters. It only cost us like 15 or 16 bucks for the whole time.
Yeah.
And it was a way to see the whole everything. But I can tell you, I know the mayor is trying to ban them there because it is so dangerous. It's insanely dangerous. So people
don't wear helmets.
Well, like us, we didn't wear helmets.
No,
I
didn't either.
But, and I mean, people are, I mean, I heard stories, people are, you know, and you have to ride them in traffic that they say don't ride them on sidewalks.
Right.
So I'm driving through rotaries on this thing and I've never been on a scooter in my life. So, you know, there were a couple touch and go times where I hit a couple bumps and I was, you know, I was thinking I'm going down a couple times, but what a city. It's an incredible place to go visit. So if you get an opportunity, you got to go do it.
They're called Birds, I think.
Yeah. That's the one I rode.
I rode a Lyft. I rode a Lyft and a Lime. So they have Lyft, Birds, Lime. They have a bunch of different companies.
I've seen Lime. Yep.
There's these guys in California, which is why they're trying to ban it in California, who they're called Birdies.
Okay.
I think they'll grab one and then they'll grab like seven of them. Because basically the app that runs Birds, it pays you to charge them.
Oh,
they're electric.
Right. Yep.
So there's guys who make their whole living collecting all these scooters, like trying to hitch them to one and drag them in like neutral to a charging station and charge all of them and get paid for it.
Huh.
And it's super dangerous.
Wow.
I mean, the whole premise of it probably is dangerous, and I get the way we overthink everything. I mean, everything's such a big deal in our society now. I mean, I grew up riding a bike with no helmet. I had cuts and scrapes over my body. But if you're looking for a cool way to get around a city when you don't have a lot of time and you don't want to pay for cabs and you don't want to do that stuff, is get one of these scooters, especially in Nashville. There's nothing better than them in Nashville because, like I said, everything's within like 6 or 7 miles of where you want to go. I mean, Kristen Cavalieri store is just down the road, 4 miles down the road from downtown. You want to go over to the football stadium. I was going to tell you about Eric Church. I watched him practice. I just rode over there Thursday night. There was all this noise.
Like
and
the
smoke.
Sound check?
Yeah, I was just sat there watching him. There cool. He was. I got kicked out of there a little bit because, you know, you couldn't be in the area we were in, but I didn't know that until I got kicked out. But it's just a great city. A lot of fun.
The birds, like, you're paying a small rate for not only transportation, but entertainment. Because it's exciting.
I can't wait to get on it. I feel like it was like, I couldn't wait. I felt kind of cool. Then you realize you're on a scooter. Like here I am like a motorcycle. I feel like I'm riding a motorcycle. But then again, Jeff, you're on a scooter. So let's take it easy here.
But you then know? Like you're rolling down the Santa Monica boardwalk.
Oh,
and all of a sudden a dog is chasing a Frisbee and almost kills you, like wipes you out.
Oh yeah.
That.
Or you try to you know, I was going by at one point and they have this bar that you, like a pedal bar.
Yeah.
So there's a bunch of people in there. Somebody tried to give me a high five. I went to give him a high five and, you know, almost lost it, but we kept it up. You know, that would have been really bad. That might have been a real bad injury because I was in the middle of traffic, which isn't smart. That's probably why they're going to get banned.
It's people that get angry, like, because you can just pick them up and leave them anywhere.
Exactly.
People like start leaving them on people's lawns that don't want them. They take them and just throw them.
And that's what it's like in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. But I didn't notice in Tennessee that they were. I didn't see very many of them just toss places. Most of them were upright in the right places.
Our out in the field is actually about a car share service incident.
I can't wait to hear that one. That'll be fun to listen to.
Ooh.
But anyway, so it was a great trip. And then I was able to go to one of the greatest weddings I've ever been to. I've been coaching for 19 years at Colchester. I was invited to, I won't, you know, put names out there, but a player of mine that I just care so deeply about invited us to her wedding down there. And she actually met her husband at Romanto's, my restaurant. So very, very awesome. And I got to spend some time with some amazing, not only both families are two of the best families I've ever met, just top to bottom. They're phenomenal. But that got to spend some time, you know, with former players that were there. It was just a great wedding. It was a great trip. It was just very, very exciting to be at. And obviously, you know, I'm home, so, you know, it's not good to be in the, I hate this weather up here. I got to get some warm weather, but it was a great trip. Got to see Jay Leno on Thursday night. It was great. He's unbelievable. I mean, he's an icon. Whenever I see guys like that, I think to myself, man, what have they seen? The things that they have done. And he kind of told a few stories.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, Jay Leno takes over for Johnny Carson, and Jai is way too young for Johnny Carson, you know, but, you know, I do remember when he took over, I was a child, but what a run he had as a Tonight Show host. And he comes to Burlington and, man, 2 hours set, man. He just kept going for 2 hours. Unbelievable for a 70-year-old man.
Yeah, well, not only a 70-year-old guy, a 70-year-old rich guy. He doesn't have to stick it out for 2 hours.
He lives next door to Steve Tisch, the owner of the New York Football Giants. He was telling these stories about, that guy's worth about $1 billion. So, I mean, he lives right next door to that guy.
Right.
I mean, I'm sure next door means like the next gated house over.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like maybe 6 blocks down the road. But
they're not sharing a duplex.
No, that's not happening with them. But I have to tell you, I'm sitting in this thing, and this is saying nothing right, but I'm sitting at this show, and I go to a bunch of comedy shows. So you know when you hear comedians, they're like, you know what it's like when you do this, or you know what it's like when you do that? And the woman sitting next to me would be like, the whole time we're watching, she'd be like, yes. Oh, yes. So, you know, and I'm like, lady, he's not talking to you. You know what I mean? Every time he'd say something, Jay Leno, that's his kind of his shtick, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Like, you know, when you're driving down the road and somebody looks at you like this, or do you know when you have to go to the bathroom? And she'd be like, So for 2.5 hours, that's all I heard was, In fact, now I'm starting in my life. Somebody says, hey, how you doing today? Did you have a good day today? I go, That's what happened. But so it was great, though. If you had an opportunity to see Jay Leno, it was a lot of fun. But let's get to our Green City Garage poll question of the day. We've got a huge show. We got to talk about Bruins and Blues, Yanks and Sox. How about my New York Yankees, by the way? I mean, listen, I don't care what you want to say about the New York Yankees. I mean, this team is beat up. There's a bunch of nobodies out there that people don't even know what their names are, a bunch of kids, and they are rocking and rolling. They put it to Boston last night, and Chris Sale falls to, 1-8 now? I mean, what is going on with them?
Is it that bad?
We'll talk about
that. I'm looking it up. He's 1-7.
He's struggling. I mean, even though he's pitching better than his record is, but he's struggling. But I definitely want to talk about that. Talk a little bit about Odell Beckham Jr. not showing up to OTA. Surprise, Cleveland. I think I've been saying this for a long time. Great move by the Giants. And I am so annoyed at Drake. We'll get to that as well. But our Green City Garage poll question today. Go to Green City Garage, 802-651-9299. Go see my buddy Chris Wallace at 49B Commerce Ave, Unit 5 in South Burlington, 05403. Let me just tell you something. You're looking for a place to get your car fixed. You're looking for a place to go where you can be comfortable and know that he's going to take good care of you. Even if you were, if I know nothing about cars, like I'm telling you, I just got a new car. I'm leasing a new car. The other, I got it about a couple months ago. I have no idea how to turn some, like the AC I'm still struggling with. I don't know how to set my radio. I feel comfortable enough even going to Chris to help me out with that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? Hey, I got to change a windshield wiper. Go to Chris. I need my oil change. Go to Chris. Need your tires ready? Go to Chris. You got something going on in your engine? Go see Chris. He is the man. Green City Garage. And our Green City Garage poll question is, what's the, and in the honor of the Yankee Sox this weekend, which I think is the greatest rivalry in all of sports because it's transcended so much time. What is the best rivalry in all sports? And you can go to 101.3 The Game at Twitter. Here's your four options. Number one, Yankees, Red Sox. Number two, Michigan, Ohio State. Number three, UNC and Duke in basketball. And number four, my buddy Jocko will like this, the Alabama Crimson Tide and the Auburn Tigers in SEC football. Those are your four choices. What's the best in the country?
I'm a Michigan guy. I'm going Michigan, Ohio State.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going Yank Sox only because I feel like the Yankee Sox rivalry has been something that's been going on for 100 years.
Michigan, Ohio State, too.
I get it. That's a big rivalry as well. But I think for Michigan, Ohio State, that's more of a regional type of thing where I think the Yankees and the Red Sox is something that even if you're not a baseball fan, you pay attention to that rivalry. And maybe it's because it gets a lot of exposure over the years. But there's a lot that goes on with that rivalry. But I agree with you. You can't go wrong with any of these. I mean, the UNC-Duke rivalry is insane as well.
I think the thing with all that ties all four of these together and why we have them, like this was a pretty easy list to come up with, is... Yeah, they at one point in time, they were all regional. But like Sox-Yankees, they crowd out the baseball conversation. Duke, North Carolina, for decades, has crowded out the national college basketball conversation. Auburn, Alabama, Michigan, Ohio State do the same thing in football.
It's very true. And you know, and an interesting story from a national perspective, and this isn't anymore just because of how big Rutland High School has gotten, how small MSJ has gotten in terms of population. But for about 35 to 40, maybe more than that, 50 to 60 years, that Rutland-MSJ rivalry down in Rutland was one of the biggest rivalries in the country. It was ranked in the top 10 in the nation in terms of rivalry. So in the state of Vermont, we had an amazing rivalry between Rutland and MSJ. It's too bad for the locals that people that are up here, the transplants, understand what that rivalry meant to that city.
Thousands of people would turn out for games from, and we're talking from like the late 40s.
The city would shut down. Yeah, there'd be parade. I mean, it was insane. Way before my time, but when my father was a young man, and obviously it was a big rivalry when I was a kid.
Even into the 90s, it was a big deal.
Into the early 2000s. That's what I mean. It's recently that it hasn't been a big deal. But nationally ranked, little Rutland City, Rutland MSJ, one of the top 10 in the country. Pretty amazing. Yeah. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk a little hockey because you know I just love me some hockey. And those Bruins and Blues are going at it. It's 1-1. We'll talk about that when we come back.
Now, back to Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
I just got a text from a listener, Duke. He just said, who's more annoying? You should have had this in as your poll question. Who's more annoying, Drake or the Miami Marlins guy that goes to all those games?
Marlins man?
Yeah, Marlins man.
Marlins man does it for a cause, at least.
Well, but I think his saltiness about Marlins man is that he came out. So I don't know if you happened to see on ESPN a while ago. There's a thing about food at different ballparks.
Okay.
And this guy, the Marlins man, who's at every big-time event. I mean, he really does. I should reach out, even though I did tweet at him last night, because I think he's kind of a hypocrite, so he probably will never come on the show now because I tweeted at him. This is what happens. I get mad. I start tweeting at people. They never come on the show. But the reality is that there was some kind of expose that at Yankee Stadium, friends of his got food poisoning.
Yeah.
And the Yankees did a couple things to try to fix it. And they really did. They went outside the box to try to fix it. But he swore he'd never go back to Yankee Stadium. I'm never going back there again. And last night, what was he doing right behind home plate? Well, there was the Marlins, man. So I think that's where he's going with that. But I would say that Drake takes the cake when it comes to being more annoying.
Oh, yeah.
He's across all sports. In every sport. He's bandwagons. Just... It's him holding flags with Conor McGregor.
Yeah.
And then Conor McGregor gets his butt kicked.
He's kind of like the kiss of death.
He's like the worst fanboy of all time.
Wherever he goes, he's just hitching his wagon to the winning team. And so he's supposed to be a Raptors fan because he's from Toronto.
Oh, he's supposed to be the quintessential Raptors fan. He's Mr. Raptor.
The other night he had to cover up tattoos he had for Steph and KD.
Yeah, he's got the two autographs. I know he's got the two numbers on it. He was wearing a Curry jersey. We'll get to Drake later on. We got plenty to talk about him, but that's interesting. But listen, get the Green City Garage poll question right now. 101.3 The Game. What is the best rivalry in all sports? Yankees, Sox, Michigan, Ohio State in football, UNC and Duke in college basketball. Another one for college football, Alabama, Auburn, the Iron Bowl. It'd be interesting to see what people think. Another great rivalry is obviously Bruins and Canadians.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's another big one.
I think that's one of the, like when we were talking about it though, Bruins, Canadians, that's a regional thing.
Right, very true.
Like,
very true.
They're just like the nature of hockey in the broader conversation.
Very true.
It doesn't really extend beyond the Northeast.
Very true. But I would even extend that maybe the same mentality with the Bama Auburn one as well. That's more of a region. I don't think college football fans are engaged as say. I wouldn't compare the Alabama Auburn football rivalry to the Michigan Ohio State football rivalry nationally. I wouldn't compare that.
I think until the 2000s, I wouldn't have either.
Yeah.
The only reason I think it was always in that list of the great rivalries is just how fierce it was.
True.
Like, I mean, when you get people poisoning trees because they hate the other school.
That's right. Very true.
But like now, the last 20 years with the SEC, dominant in college football, that rivalry now takes that national stage.
Yeah,
true. That's sort of like, I mean, just the way that the SEC has sort of leaped past the Big Ten.
Yeah.
Michigan, Ohio State still is Michigan, Ohio State,
yeah.
But that Auburn, Alabama has that national resonance now.
One of the best ESPN commercials of all time is the guy that's on the first date with he's the Michigan fan, she's the Ohio State fan, and they're having the conversation, and she tells him that she's where are you from, Ohio? Go Bucks, and he just jumps out of the car.
Yep.
She stops the car and he stands up and goes, or maybe it was vice versa, go Blue. She's a Michigan fan, go Blue, and he jumps out of the car and goes, go Buckeyes, as he's like bleeding because he couldn't be in the car. But that's a great commercial. All right, let's change subjects here, man. It's Stanley Cup final time, Bruins and Blues. I think to me going into this, and look, I'm going to be as transparent with you all as I can be. I'm not a big hockey guy. I'm just not. I know people think it's crazy that I'm not. I've tried to be. I'm a Rangers fan. I pay attention to the Rangers. I like to see them do well when it's playoff time and the Rangers are playing. I'm going to watch those games. But it's hard for me because I'm just not a huge, I'm a diehard baseball fan, football fan, basketball fan. I love golf. I love soccer. I'm a sports guy.
Only got so much bandwidth.
Well, I mean, this is what it is. But I mean, you think a sports guy like me, winter is like my worst. I hate being outside in the winter. So you think I'd pick up some hockey? I'm not a big hockey guy, but I am intrigued by this matchup. Because let's face it, a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, before I left for vacation, it was a foregone conclusion that this was the Boston Bruins Stanley Cup to lose. No question. I mean, the big bad Bruins, they were rolling over people.
To take a hockey term, they were a wagon.
They were a wagon. I've never heard that term, but I like it, and we'll own it now.
Okay.
They were. They were rolling. And let's face it, they struggled a little bit with who is it they struggled with?
Columbus.
With Columbus
early,
but we made that prediction that they would get control, and they did, and then they just ran rap shot over the next team.
The Hurricanes.
That was embarrassing.
Yeah.
In a Hurricane team, they came in probably the hottest team in the NHL.
Yeah,
and the most highly. I mean, they were rolling when they played. The Boston Bruins made them look like they shouldn't even been in the playoffs. They go play the St. Louis Blues team, a St. Louis Blues team that's very good. And you try to say that 10 times fast. But at the same time, a team that I don't think anyone, it was like the Harlem Globetrotters and the Washington Generals taking on each other. You saw a game in terms of what was happening with the first game where the Blues get a lead, but the Bruins look like they have control. And then all of a sudden, there's a big hit that happens.
Yep.
And it looks like the switch got flicked. And to me, the Blues look like they said, you know what, enough is enough. And we may not win this thing, but we're going to beat the physical bag out of the Bruins. And right now, the Bruins, to me, look like the team that, going in, I thought the Bruins were the more physical, more aggressive, the ones that they had all the momentum. To me, it looks like St. Louis has got something here because they seem like the most physical ones. And Patrick Sharp was on with the boys this week, former UVM and NHL standout. And he had this to say.
I think the Torrey Krug hit in game one kind of woke up the Blues a little bit. If I'm a Bruin, I love it because Torrey Krug's on my team and it's a huge hit and it's an awesome play. But there's a flip side to it, and I don't think the St. Louis Blues were too happy with it. And they responded in game two. They were as physical as I've ever seen them in that second period. It was crazy. There was bodies everywhere. Both teams were physical. The feeling out process is over.
And that was the interview that Patrick Sharp had with the boys on the huddle during the week this week. And I agree with him. And I got to say, St. Louis's physicality, I mean, they looked better than the Bruins did. It looks like they were in the Bruins' head, Austin. And I got to tell you, going back to St. Louis, there's a lot of momentum there. I think the Bruins are the better team. I think they're going to win.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't be surprised to see St. Louis get this thing done, especially what they've proven, that if you punch the big bully in the mouth, you may not get it back.
Right. And so the talk going in, we had Fluto Shinzawa of The Athletic on last week. Talking with Lauren and I.
That's a good get, man.
Yeah. Well,
look
hey,
at you.
Hey.
I mean, you don't even need me. That's another thing. When I don't listen, because I listen, you guys would be so good. I'll come back. I'll be all feeling bad for myself.
But yeah, sunshine from you aside, the talk, I mean, these two teams are super evenly matched. They're very similarly constructed teams. The one of the differences, though, I mean, the Bruins have maybe the better top line,
yep,
which hasn't showed it yet in the series, but the Blues are the bigger team. They're a little better at the back end. The D in front of their goalie there, Bennington, is just a little better than the Bruins, and they're big. Like if the Bruins are going to play physical and bring it to the Blues are bigger.
But like, has anybody brought physicality to the Bruins? Has anyone brought the heat to the Bruins? I mean, from an outsider's looking in, it seems to me the Bruins are always the ones that are kind of borderline dirty. They're chippy. Their players are aggressive.
You're talking like that, and I'm thinking Marchand.
Exactly. Marchand. But they bring that kind of intensity, and that's where their fans love, and they're the ones that bring the pop. They're the ones that bring the fury. All of a sudden, St. Louis said, "No, enough. We're bringing this now. I mean, how many times did Rask just get destroyed in the net? Mm. I mean, they really are bringing the heat. And I'm going to tell you, I mean, the Bruins to me, like, now are kind of on their heels a little bit, like, whoa. And they look like they were on their heels in the overtime against the Blues the other day.
Yeah. So watching game two in the office Wednesday night, 75 playoff games, high school playoff games coming in. So like, I'm sort of like looking down.
Yeah.
I'm on the phone. I look up. It's 10 minutes into the first period, 3 goals. Like, it's 2-1 Bruins. And then, you know, look down. It's 2-2. And then I start looking up more.
Yeah.
And it's back and forth. And like, the Bruins get a shorthanded chance. The Blues push it down, run into Rask. And you're like, oh man, this is getting good.
Yeah.
This is getting really good.
Yeah.
And this could be like, I mean, the St. Louis is a different market for the Stanley Cup final. The Bruins, third time since 2011.
Sure.
But everyone hates Boston. That could be an added benefit for the NHL as far as like ratings and people getting into it. But the hockey is a really good advertisement for hockey.
Joe, there's no question about it. 655-6672 is the number to call if you want to join our conversation. You're talking some Bruins and Blues. 802-655-6672. Just got a text on the text line from Todd. He says, and this isn't about hockey, this is about our poll question today, which is, what's the best rivalry? Interesting that all the best NBA rivalries are a thing of the past, probably due to the fact that the top players spent a lot of their time trying to make the next super team. Used to have great ones, though. Celtics, Sixers, Celtics, Lakers, and Bulls and Pistons, to name a few. Todd's 100% right, and it's funny, when we were putting this together this morning, I thought about a couple of NBA rivalries, and there was nothing better than the Lakers and the Celtics in the 80s, and there was nothing you looked forward to more than Michael Jordan taking on the bad boys from Detroit in the early 90s before Michael kind of took that thing over. And I'll tell you another great rivalry was the Knicks and the Bulls during Jordan's heyday when Patrick Ewing was there.
Yeah.
But this is the NBA you're in today now. It's not as exciting. You don't, that's what we talk about all the time. Go ahead, Aaron.
I think there was a time where every team in the NBA had some kind of rival that was pretty major. And it is interesting. And you complain about this a lot, that it does seem like everyone's friends now in the NBA. Well, all the players get along.
Agreed.
Trading jerseys.
But here, I get all that. But what's happening also is every team also had a superstar. Every single team, even the bad teams, had a superstar that you could like rally behind and get excited about. Today's NBA, for the exception of a handful of teams, you know, it's hard to get excited about them. You know, you've got situations where you've got player collusion where you see players coming together.
Yep.
You see that. So those rivalries just aren't there anymore. And it's too bad, because I feel like my generation growing up as a child and watching the Celtics play the Lakers in the 84 and 85 and 86, and then you hand that off to Michael's time against the Pistons, and you hand that off, and you could probably find a bunch of other rivalries that were insane back in the day. You know, the Dominique Wilkins matchup with Michael Jordan every year was an amazing matchup you couldn't wait to see. So, I mean, it's just a different time and a different world, but that's where we're at today.
There's no entrenched loyalties anymore.
Very true.
Fans are fans of players, not teams.
Yep.
Because players are going to switch teams 2, 3, 4, 10 times. It's you can't ever get that sort of longstanding tension and history with one franchise and another with the same nucleus of players.
There were also player rivalries that were fascinating, and there were a lot more fighting, a lot more like getting each other's face. Wilt Chamberlain and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar supposedly hated each other
for a very long time.
Then they became friends when they were older. But Wilt despised Kareem, and you could see it every time they played.
Well, let me tell you what screwed the NBA up, and I say it every week and people get mad, but it's LeBron James. I mean, I blame LeBron James for this. Now, and I'll tell you why. You have the next generational player in LeBron James after Michael. Let's say he goes to Cleveland and stays in Cleveland his whole career. Now what you're talking about is you have a superstar in LeBron James that's building an organization in Cleveland that you'd find other rivalries. You would have had a rivalry with him and Miami Heat and Dwayne Wade. You would have had a rivalry with Rose for years in Chicago. You had a rivalry with the guys out west in Golden State. I mean, LeBron James stays there. Instead, LeBron James decides, I'm going to take my talents to Miami, and you have your first super team, and that's what we have. And now all of a sudden, that's what the NBA is. I get that NBA playoffs are a lot of fun, even though I feel like the NBA playoffs this year have been a little bit not as fun. They're either blowouts or hasn't been very competitive. But in terms of year-to-year and regular season, it just isn't fun to watch.
And there could have been rivalries. Miami dogged it out with the Pacers and with the Spurs multiple times. But LeBron got along with all those guys. Lance Stephenson tried to create a rivalry with him when he was on the Pacers. It didn't happen. LeBron just played
it off.
But
the rivalry with the Pacers was never going to be anything because they weren't as good as that super team they had in Miami. Like, nobody was as good as that super team that was in Miami. There was never a chance that there was going to be any kind of success there.
And to your point, LeBron was almost avoiding it to an even further extent.
Of course, it's very true.
Do you want, I feel like this is a little bit of a contrarian take away from you and the beating the LeBron situation. Rewind it further. Shaq.
Yep, sure.
Well, he had rivalries with everybody.
But you want to talk about guys just hopping from one team to another rather than building something they wanted to...
That's a great point. That's a great point. He started with Orlando.
They were on the verge with Orlando.
Very true.
And then he bounced.
Very true.
And then
he had the problem with Kobe in L.A. And then he bounced again. I agree with that. I can go back to Shaq as well, but I feel like to me... Shaquille O'Neal, as dominant a player as he was, is still not LeBron James. I think LeBron James transcends Shaquille O'Neal.
And he, at the very least, was always causing smoke with other players. Him and David Robinson could not get along. He talked trash about Yao Ming before Yao had even played a game.
Big Shaqtus.
He went at...
Yeah, I do love Shaq.
When he went to Phoenix, he became the Big Shaqtus.
That's true, the Big Shaqtus.
He couldn't even get along with Dwight Howard, and Dwight Howard idolized him from a childhood.
Yeah.
And that kind of stuff used to make it fun, where even if you were a team hopper, you had people you hated, and every time you saw them on the court, everyone knew that there was going to be energy in that building where you guys were trying to kill each other. And now that's gone, and there's super teams, and all the small market teams have nobody. And you're just watching basketball at this point. There's no outside energy.
Team hopping aside, I just feel like we went away. I think Shaq went, I mean, Shaq, yeah, it's a great point you bring up, but Shaq to me he left Orlando for whatever reason.
Was a whole thing.
There was something going on there.
Like, they did the magic, this magic feeling 30 for 30.
Yep.
Where there was like something a little untoward on the part of the agent.
Yep.
Where like Shaq didn't necessarily really want to leave,
right?
But sort of got like coaxed
into it. And I don't know that, right?
Like, but it was murky.
And Shaq went to an organization like the Lakers that was coming off in a brilliant run with Magic and all those years.
But so they'd been down for a few years.
They had been
too.
Down, but it wasn't like he was going because, you know, I'm bringing this player and this player and this. Shaq was a part of the rebirth of the Lakers. There's something to be said about that. To me, LeBron James decided, I'm going to Miami because Bosh and Wade are down there, and we're going to just go run rampshot over the whole league instead of staying in Cleveland, where they were building something in Cleveland. Cleveland was in the championship. They were in the Eastern Conference Final the year before he left against Boston.
Yeah, yep.
And Boston was getting older, and he was getting ready to take over. That's when LeBron was LeBron to me. That's when I was excited about LeBron James. So to me, when LeBron James did that, that's what, you know, superstars started to see, and you started to see these players move around. So there's a handful of great teams in the league, and then there's a handful of everything else. But to me, Toronto could be that feel-good story. And we're going to talk about that at the top of the hour about this Drake situation. Because to me, Toronto was exactly the type of team you could get behind. And we can talk about that. I know we got to take a break here in a minute. But, you know, listen, Bruins, Blues, let's wrap this segment up real quick, Austin. I still like the Bruins to win this thing. But I'm telling you, man, I am intrigued. I'm intrigued with what the Blues bring to the table. And I'm going to tell you something right now. It's the game's tonight, right? Tonight at 7:30.
Yeah.
You can hear the game on 960 The Zone. Let me just say this. If the Bruins don't come with some intensity, they're going to go down 2-1. Because St. Louis will bring the intensity, and they're going to carry it the whole for three periods. They're going to carry it three periods. Because
that building is going to be nuts.
And they have nothing to lose, right?
Right.
They're not supposed to win.
Right.
It's a scary proposition if you're a Bruins fan. But I still think the Bruins get it done. All right, take a quick break when we come back. Hey, man. How about the New York Yankees? I mean, come on. We're going to talk Yanks and Sox. I won't be tough on you. Don't worry.
I'll be
right back.
Phone lines are now open. Call 802-655-6672. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
I mean, this is just a really nice surprise we have coming up here, Austin.
Yeah, so, you lit right up.
Yeah. So like maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I go to the Pinstripe Bowl in New York in the Bronx. Notre Dame's playing Rutgers, and I'm going out to grab myself a hot dog. And who comes out of one of the side rooms, I'm assuming a suite, is Jack Curry of the S Network. Okay? I mean, you know, I'm a big Yankee fan, and I follow the Yanks pretty much. And there he is, and we had this little conversation. He's very kind. I said, hey, Jack, you know, I'm trying to get my own radio show going. He's like, if you ever get out, let me, you know, give me a call. So he came. He was my first guest on this show. And if you know Jack Curry, you follow Jack Curry on the YES Network, he has got a lot going on and just wrote an amazing book with David Cohn called Full Count. And I had emailed him earlier in the week, and he's, you know, it's hard to get him in. And here he is calling us. We got him right now live on the TikTok Jewelers guest line on 101.3 The Game, Sports Saturday with Jeff and Austin, our good friend Jack Curry. Good morning, Jack. How you doing today, buddy?
So, Jeff, how was that hot dog? Do you remember?
Was it
a tasty hot dog?
A Yankee Stadium hot dog, Jack, in the middle of January is awesome. You know what I mean? Come on.
That was a fairly, for a January day, we did okay weather-wise that day. You didn't exactly freeze watching that college football game.
You know, what was also neat about that was it was weird to watch a football game there because the perspective is different, right? From the Yankee dugout, that's where the end zone is, correct? I'm trying to think how they, it was just weird watching a football game there from watching so many games there watching baseball, you know what I mean?
Very strange. Obviously, it's the new stadium, so it's only been around about a decade, but it's just like the old one. And even when they have soccer games at Yankee Stadium and I'm watching the grounds crew assemble the goalposts and get the lines ready, it's different because it's a place that we're so accustomed to just seeing baseball being played.
Well, I know you got a lot going on today, so we'll get right into your new book, Full Count with David Cohn. I just ordered it. I can't wait to get it, but I've definitely read some snippets here and there and heard a couple interviews you guys have had. Actually, David Cohn was just on this week on our sister station, 620 AM WVMT, to talk about the book. But what an experience it has to be. And David Cohn is quite a character, Jack. Talk about some of the highlights of the book.
Well, I always thought when I covered David, before we became colleagues at the YES Network, I was a sports writer for the New York Times. And when I watched him pitch, I always thought more so than any other pitcher, you could watch, almost see the wheels spinning in his head. He was wondering about what was the next sequence of pitches he should throw. What should I do? My slider isn't working. I don't like the life on my fastball. I always thought it would be a great book to try and climb inside his brain. And what was he thinking in times of exhilaration and in times of desperation? So I approached David with this idea a few years ago, and I said exactly what I just said to you. I said, I'd love to do a book that gets inside the mind of a pitcher, and you're that pitcher. And David said, let's do it. So along the way, we planned to tell the pitching story and the pitching journey, but the deeper we got into this, it ends up being a pitching journey and a personal journey, because David's pretty honest in this book about some of his mistakes he made in his career, some of the people that impacted him positively, some of the people that impacted him negatively. So I think for anyone who loves baseball and loves pitching, there's a lot of content in this book that will stand out to them.
Jack, what did you get out of this book that really took you back that you didn't know going in?
It's a great question, and I've been asked that a few times.
Okay.
And the answer might surprise you a little, but I have to explain it. We all know that the pitcher-catcher relationship is sacred. That is baseball. You need those two to be on the same page, or you're going to have a rough evening. I knew that. But then once David took me to the depths and the detail of what he needed a catcher to do and why he aligned with certain catchers and why other catchers didn't match up with him, he loved throwing to Joe Girardi because Joe Girardi got him. Joe Girardi saw his mannerisms on the mound, knew when it was time to go to the next sign because David didn't like to shake off. David just wanted to stare, and he wanted the catcher to know, well, if in a beat of your heart, I haven't started to throw a pitch, that means I need the next sign. Girardi got that. Posada didn't. And he and Posada clashed a lot in 2000. And in the book, he talks about, I was going to say a memorable event, but he actually got in Posada's face one day in the Yankee clubhouse to the point that some teammates had to kind of say, Cone, come on, calm down. Cone doesn't even remember it. But Jeter and Posada to this day tease him about it and say, remember the time you picked on the young catcher? He was just so much in the moment, he was upset with Posada. So we did a whole chapter on the pitcher-catcher relationship. And I think if you love baseball or know anything about baseball, it's kind of a chapter where there'll be some eye-popping anecdotes.
And every Yankee fan just adores David Wells. And David Cone really was the caretaker of David Wells, correct?
That's a great word. That is the perfect word to use. Wells had run out of detention time with Joe Torre, or however you want to phrase it. Cone saw that relationship not being able to be mended, and he said to Torre, let me take over. I'll handle him. I'll keep him out of your hair. You'll get him to pitch well every 5 days, and I'll keep him out of jail. And I think he said that in jest, but I think he kind of meant it. And we reveal in the book something that they did as teammates that I had never heard two teammates do. I guess I'll give away a little bit of the secret here, but basically they didn't stay with the Yankees on the road. Cone felt that the best way to get the most out of Wells was to get him away from, basically get him away from the rules. Wells thought it was cool that they weren't following the rules, that the Yankees would land in Chicago and everybody would get on a bus and go to the team hotel, and David and David would get in a cab and they would go to some other luxury hotel, some other five-star hotel, and they'd live their own little solitary life, and they'd have parties in their hotel, they'd invite their teammates over. The thing was, though, as Cone points out, it wasn't just all about parties. They both had tremendous seasons in 1998, finishing third and fourth for the Cy Young Award, so this alignment worked. Wells sort of being the rebel, not having to listen to anybody, and that helped him pitch so well.
Now there's another little snippet I read in the Post, I think, when this book first came out, and wasn't there something where that George Steinbrenner didn't love the fact that they were partying, but Cone kind of like eased his mind somewhere in there as well?
1997, they lose to the Indians in the playoffs. Cone, not wanting everybody to just go back to New York and sort of wallow in their own misery, calls a buddy of his who owns a bar in New York and says, "Could you stay open? We just want to have a few beers." So the guy says yes. They land in New York, whatever time it is, and they go to this bar and hang out. Well, that friend was not as good of a friend as David thought. There were a bunch of pictures taken. They ended up on the front page of the New York Post under the headline Yankee Panky. So Steinbrenner sees that and thinks, you guys just lost. Your season is over, and you're out there partying. So Cone called Steinbrenner. He wanted to absolve all the other players that ended up going to that bar and said, listen, this is all on me. I wanted the guys to have a place to go so we could commiserate together. I had a friend who I thought was a friend, but instead he took a bunch of pictures, and they ended up probably being sold to the Post. George, if you're going to lambaste anyone, lambaste me. And George appreciated that Cone stood up and took the hit. And from that point on, they actually had a very friendly relationship, so much so that David was able to tweak and tease Steinbrenner, which if you ever asked Rich Gossage or Ron Guidry or Willie Randolph if they were ever able to tease George in the 70s, they would laugh for the next hour.
We are talking to the Yes Network's and author of Full Count, a story of David Cone's pitching career, with Jack Curry, here on Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game. All right, Jack, listen, Cone is definitely one of the greatest competitors. What did he say? And I don't want to divulge too much, and this will be the last book question I ask you, but the biggest moment maybe in as a Yankee fan, as a young kid back in the day, watching Joe Torre walk to the mound in Game 3 of the World Series against the Atlanta Braves. He looks David Cone in the eye and asks him if he's okay, and Cone says, yes, I am, and Torre lets him finish that game. We all know what happened. The Yankees win the next four and win the World Series. What was that moment like for David Cone?
Jeff, that was such a big moment in Cone's career that we ended up doing an entire chapter on that inning. We call it the anatomy of an inning, and go through that inning, pitch by pitch, moment by moment, conversation by conversation. The one thing I will say is you know that moment well, and Cone, after getting through that inning, had told reporters after the game, I lied to Joe when he asked me if I had anything left. I lied to him. I really didn't. Well, Cone tells me 20-something years later, well, I was lying that night. I really did have something left. I never envisioned not taking the baseball, or keeping the baseball, I should say, in that situation. I absolutely believed I could get through that inning. After the game, I guess I decided to be self-deprecating and glib. But as he says in that chapter, I'm breaking some new news on myself here. I firmly believed I could get through that inning.
It's unbelievable. All right, Jack, real quick, and only have a couple minutes left here. I do wanted to get into the team a little bit. What a story this team has been, and we all know what they've been able to do with all these injuries. But I think the question I have is, well, is there a chance this synergy could be changed when guys start coming back?
I've been asked that question, and my response is this. The Yankees will not be the first team that had to welcome back some injured players who were stars. My thing is this. If you're Didi Gregorius or Dellin Betances or Stanton or Judge, you have to realize when you come back, you're not jumping on a merry-go-round. You're jumping on a bullet train. This team is moving. So you'd better be ready, and you'd better be ready to jump on and play at that high level. And, Jeff, I believe that they will be. I understand the question. I think people think about chemistry, and you used a great word, synergy. But I think if we put this in layman's terms, in business terms, your best salesman broke his leg, and he's out for a month. And while he was gone, everybody did pretty well. When the best salesman comes back, does everybody think that he's going to destroy sales? You say, no, we got our best salesman back. We should be even better. So I absolutely do not think that there will be an issue. Will some playing time be changed? Yes. Will someone like Clint Frazier, when they are absolutely whole, could he see himself back in AAA? Yes, that could absolutely happen. So those things could change. I don't think that the team is going to suddenly suffer because these guys are back. But also, they're 31-10, and they're lost 41 games. That's above a 75% winning clip. They are going to come back down to earth at some point. So it will be interesting that when these players come back, say they have a 10-10 run, does the narrative become, well, they were better with the replacement guys? That could absolutely become a narrative.
Jack Curry, you are the best. Thanks so much for taking the time, and can't wait to get the book, and hopefully we can talk again down the road.
Thanks so much for having me, guys. Have a great weekend.
All right, the Yes Network's Jack Curry and the author of Full Count Story by David Cohn.
That sounds juicy, man.
Oh, it does. It does. And if you're a Yankee fan, I think it might be and I've done a lot of research on this book just because I've been reading about it, and some of the stories in here are insane. So even if you're not a Yankee fan.
No, I'm not a Yankee fan, and I'm like, ooh,
but yeah,
this sounds...
first of all, David Cohn is the original crazy dude. I don't know if you guys, you may be a little too young to remember.
A little bit, yeah.
I remember when he played for the Mets, you know how the stock photos of their faces, and he made this goofy face for the year. I mean, he's one of the original crazy guys, but there's some great stories in there, and Jack's a great author, and obviously if you're a Yankee fan on Yes Network, you can see him every night. He's in their pregame and postgame show. So that was a great interview, and I'm excited to have with Jack Curry. All right, take a quick break. When we come back, it's Out in Left Field time. Don't go anywhere.
Get ready, because you're about to hear some weird shit. This is Out in Left Field on 101.3 The Game.
Today, pal.
A man builds a fence around a car share vehicle parked at his home without his permission.
Are there any German pronunciations you need help with in this one?
No, luckily I believe this is all in the U.S.
Hey, I'm outside of this joke? Is this when I was away joke?
The first week you were gone, it was something from a German-speaking country, and he started going through it, and I was like, nope, 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 nope. And I gave him the pronunciation, and he just ran with it. So
I did. I checked one of the names beforehand.
Gotcha.
I didn't check all of them, and that was a mistake.
Clouton.
A Seattle man took exception to a car share vehicle that was parked without permission at his duplex, so he built a fence around it. Dan Smith tells Cairo TV that he doesn't know who parked the car to go Mercedes on May 17th, but it was not one of his tenants. By the next day, he had erected a barricade preventing other customers from using the vehicle. He wants ShareNow, the company that operates Car2Go, to pay $65 a day in storage fees, $300 for the fence, and up to $500 for harassment fees. The company says it has been unable to remove the sedan because of the fence. Its policy requires customers who park in unapproved areas to pay any towing and ticketing fees. The company says it does not tolerate having its vehicles held for ransom.
I don't even know where to go with all this. it just sounds like a guy that's got a little problem. And he does something this ridiculous, and then he wants to be compensated for How are you supposed to get the car out of there if you're going to build a fence around it?
Well, he can. Presumably, he would take the fence down since it's his property. I think the idea is, I don't think he's actually that mad about it. I think this is an opportunity to make money.
What kind of fence is this? Are we talking about like a chain
it's
link not, fence?
It's nothing crazy. I saw
Have you
it.
Sent
it's,
a picture? Oh, okay.
You know those like 2-inch by 2-inch wood poles that are like
yeah.
square?
Yeah.
It's those, that with tape. It's like,
oh, so this is very like
you could drive through
league.
It pretty easily.
Yeah, okay. This is not like a cement wall. Okay, understood.
Which just, it makes it funny that he's charging $300 for the fence because there's no way that thing cost him more than like $40.
I applaud the hustle.
Exactly. I think that's what he's doing. I don't think he actually is that upset about it. I think this is an opportunity to make money on an unprecedented legal situation.
And you got to give the guy some credit. I mean, he's MacGyvering a fence with some wood pieces and some tape.
Yeah.
And that's right up my alley. I like fixing things with tape. That's what I do. I ask my wife. That's what I do with the house.
How do you play, my friend? Heady play. It is weird. There's going to be a lot of gray area coming up with all these car share companies getting
I don't even
so
know what
big.
That is. What the heck's a car share company?
Well, so like...
it's the same as with a bird, but with a car.
Oh.
Yeah, like I think around... Do they have Zipcar around here? Or
I don't
like,
know.
There might be like car share VT or something like that. But like I was in Austin, Texas last December. Buddy of mine, it was a Mercedes. It's like a company that has like Mercedes and nice cars around town. And you basically use an app, you unlock it. And you drive it from one place to another.
I do know about this. A friend of mine did this when they went to Florida. That's right. That's right. I do know about this. He drove a beautiful, this unbelievable car.
Yeah.
Like a Maserati or something. That's how we got the car.
And it doesn't cost that much more than like an Uber.
Huh,
like it's pretty much a wash.
Yeah.
It's sweet.
So basically you could put your car up as you can borrow my car. Like I'm going to be away. You can use my car. You put it in the company.
The company owns the cars.
Oh, the company owns the car.
Yeah.
So it's basically a rental car company.
It's like a micro rental.
Only you don't have to go through the whole process of waiting in line for 6 hours like I had to do in Florida when I was getting my car when I landed a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, right. You just walk up to the car.
And just beep it up and you go, I'm all in for that. I like that.
It's pretty crazy, right? But all this gray area between like the bird scooters and Lyft. Or in a car share and all that stuff.
It's crazy what's happening in the world, right? Like the other day, I watched something on Facebook yesterday, and Amazon has this giant blimp flying over someplace, and all these drones started coming out of it that were taking packages places. I'm thinking to myself, that's scary to me.
Yeah.
That's like, to me, is like an invasion. I mean, that's scary. That looks scary to me.
That sounds like a Black Mirror episode.
Is that
a Netflix show?
Netflix
yeah.
show. I got to get back on Netflix. There are so many things people talk about, and I'm like,
yeah.
I have no clue.
Black Mirror is very dystopian. It's like,
what? You couldn't speak German, but you can speak dystopian. I don't even know what that means.
It's the opposite of a utopia. It's like
the opposite of utopia.
If the world was different but
right.
darker.
Gotcha. Understood.
So does it have
Amazon blimps? Does it have Amazon that poops out
stuff
a bunch
like
of
that.
Drones?
Yeah.
Didn't a guy make like a world where no one could procreate? Was that one of the episodes?
It's like basically take some weird premise and just build a world around it.
And on that note, let's do your sports update.
Sports update time.
Getting you ready for game day. It's Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
Ooh.
Oh, you're liking this.
This is like probably one of my 10 favorite songs in the whole world.
So maybe this is a song that was going in your head when you're walking in Scotland playing golf by yourself when it's hailing out.
No, I was very in the moment. I wasn't.
Yeah.
I was very present. I wasn't thinking about music somewhere else.
Oh, there you go. Hey, Liz, I'll tell you one thing. I say this all the time. One of the things we brag about around here is the Burlington Free Press sports writers. Here are our good friend here, Austin Danforth, my co-host here on Sports Saturday, and our good friend Alex Brom. You guys do it all. But this time of year, the spring sports season here in Vermont, it is rocking and rolling right now, Austin.
Dude,
let's update what's going on here, man.
So Tuesday, everything was supposed to happen Tuesday.
Right.
Washed out.
No, you're
rain.
Kidding.
Go figure.
I mean, that's crazy talk.
This spring?
It rains?
Yeah,
it's been raining?
A couple times.
Okay.
So everything in the world happened Wednesday. 76 games. Pretty sure that's a modern day BFP playoff day record. Dizzying amount of action. But now we're basically through most of the quarterfinals. Today on tap for Alex is at Division I
yep.
track and field.
Yep.
I'm at D2 once we get off the air. But like a lot of upsets, a lot of weird results, I'd say surprises. Like you got Wednesday, number 15 BFA baseball goes down to Burn Burton, the 2 seed, pulls off a 6-5 upset.
It's unbelievable.
Pair that with Mount Mansfield's 10-7 upset at Linden. All of a sudden, Mount Mansfield, the 10 seed, is hosting a quarterfinal. They won it. They're going to Colchester on Tuesday. The Lake Show won their state title rematch against SB.
And they have their first, in the history of their program, this is their first ever hosting a semifinal, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing.
First time they'd ever beaten South Burlington in the playoffs.
Oh, how awesome.
It's been a good run here in the playoffs.
And what can we expect going forward here? I mean, it looks like we have some chaos, at least in the baseball side, right?
Always chaos in baseball. Division One softball is like all the top four seeds advanced, but varying degrees of like top seeded Essex. They had to score in the last inning to beat number 8 Brattleboro. You got BFA. They took care of work against Mount Anthony yesterday. Missisquoi had to squeak out an 8-7 win over 10th seeded Rutland. Apparently they were down to their last out in the seventh, got an infield hit, couple free bases, and then scored the game winning run with still two outs in the seventh. And that's, I mean, Missisquoi, they have the newly minted Gatorade Player of the Year, Sarah Harvey, who has absolutely bonkers numbers. I think she's 51 RBIs, 11 home runs in 16 games. She's batting like 7-something. It's nuts.
And we'll get more into that in a second, but I do want to mention Vermont Engine Company Service. Vermont Engine Service Incorporated has been in business since 1985, located at 16 Krupp Drive in Williston, 802-863-2326, or you can visit them online at www.vermontengine.com or on Facebook. Their hours of operation are 7:30 to 5 Monday through Friday, and today, Saturday, they're open 8 to noon. They're an engine machine shop that focuses on engine rebuilding, boring and honing of cylinders, crankshaft grinding, head rebuilding, engine balancing, turn brake drums and rotors, and free flywheel resurfacing. They sell mowers, they sell Dixie choppers and grasshopper zero-turn mowers. We talk about this all the time, Austin. People will say to you that it's not the time to buy a lawnmower because you're going into the season. Wrong. Go over to Vermont Engine Service and do it now. They got great deals. Check them out. They're great people over there. We're really proud to have them on the show. Give them a call as well. 802-863-2326, Vermont Engine Service. So we had just talked a little bit about the softball situation. Definitely very exciting times. Baseball's looking strong. We have big track day today as well.
Yeah.
I think there are all kinds of things going on.
We're trying to, there's a lot of balls in the air, a lot of ins, a lot of outs. You go to lacrosse.
Yes.
CBU, boys lacrosse going for 7th straight championship. That's like just, it's crazy how good they've been. You got their sort of arch nemesis, arch rival, arch rivals, Essex. They got to play in the semis on Tuesday. The other side of the bracket, you got the 7th seeded South Burlington. They pounded Mount Anthony 22-7 in their opener. Then they squeaked past number 2 BFA yesterday 6-4.
It's going to be a lot of fun. And we say this all the time, you know, these kids are working so hard and these coaches are behind spring sports, especially because it takes so long to get them out on the fields in most cases, unless you're lucky enough to have a turf where you can get out there when the snow's gone or when it's not raining because you can get, but so many schools don't have turf that these kids have to work their rear ends off. A lot of it's spent in the gym and just working in the off season. And now it's all in this situation here. Get out there and watch these kids and root them on because your communities have great players all over the place.
Yeah. It's not only that, you got this, just the school year coming to the end too. So there's a lot of things going on. You're juggling graduations and championships and, it's going to be good.
655-6672 is the number to call if you want to join our conversation. 802-655-6672, or you can text us on the Town Fair Tire text line, 802-655-6672. The Green City Garage poll question today was, what is the best rivalry in all sports? Real quick, I just want to get an update on what that was. We had the Yankees, Sox, Michigan, Ohio State in college football, North Carolina and Duke in college hoops, and we also had Alabama and Auburn in college football. What is winning right now, my man?
Red Sox are leading at 67%. UNC.
Let's re-say that.
Red Sox Yankees is winning at 67%.
Let's re-say that again.
Red Sox Yankees.
No, let's start. No, the Yankees Red Sox. Let's do it that way.
Yankees Red Sox. Thank you very much. Winning at 67%. UNC Duke is 19%. Michigan versus Ohio State is at 14%. And Alabama Auburn rough 0%.
0% from the Iron Bowl. Well, what are you going to do though? It is a great rivalry.
I can't stand SEC football, so that makes me really
makes
happy.
You happy. So listen, there's a couple things that I'm annoyed at.
You got to get something off your chest. I think.
Do. Well, I'm just annoyed. You know,
when you stood up.
I stood up. You didn't want to sit anymore. I've had it with sitting. I'm standing up now because I'm annoyed. You know, I'll get to tell you, Austin. You don't do this show for a couple of weeks, and things start to kind of tick you off. And there is nobody right now in the league. There's two people right now that are ticking me off, and we'll start with the first one. It's Drake. Drives me batty. You know, if I'm the Toronto Raptors today, if I'm a Toronto Raptors, let's just talk about the Raptors first of all. I love this team. I love the way they do their business. I love Kawhi Leonard. Van Fleet is starting to become a player you can really root for.
Oh, Pascal Siakam the other day.
Gasol is an older player that's getting the job done. They are in the process right now, and I don't know, and we'll talk about who we think. So we're going to talk with Ian Levy, NBA editor from fansided.com, coming up. But they just go out their home against Golden State, who I think everybody feels is going to be the NBA champion. And they basically dismantle Golden State in game one. So this is a nice story. This is a story. Wow, the NBA could use this story. Here's the team that's not, they're a great team. Don't get me wrong.
They've never been this good.
Never been this good. And here's a story you can rally around because they're not a super team. You know, I think people are still talking about, they're not a distraction. Kawhi might be leaving. You got to turn this crap off. I can't do this with Drake anymore. But then what do you see the day after the big win on all over social media? What do you see?
Drake's face.
Drake everywhere. Drake arguing with Draymond, with Green. You see Drake screaming and yelling. You see Drake's jersey. Drake's got two tattoos. It's got two players' numbers. He's got, Curry and Durant's number tattooed on his arm, but he's covering that with a Nike wristband. I mean, what kind of dude wears a wristband to a game anyway? But he's got a wristband around his arm. And that's all you see is Drake. If I'm a Toronto Raptor today, I'm angry at that.
Yeah.
I'm angry that this is the face of my franchise. And that would drive me bananas.
It's the NBA Finals featuring Drake.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's making it about him, and it's not about him. I mean, you had all the opportunity in the world to be a big-time Toronto fan, but you're walking around with a number 30 and a number 35 on your arm, and now you want to walk around with a Del Curry Raptors jersey? Like, really? Really, Drake?
Yeah, well, but on top of it, it's like, why is ESPN and the powers that be on so and everywhere, why is he a focal point?
Well, because people are eating
it
up.
It's crossover.
And let me ask this question as well. If I was at a basketball game and I walked up to the head coach and started massaging his shoulders in the middle of a play,
that kills me.
I mean, how do you let that happen? I mean, honestly, how do you let that happen? Drake is on the side. When Green walks up to Drake and they're having that argument, and there's some language, there's a little kid sitting right next to Drake videoing the whole thing. Like, what makes, why? Like, what is, I mean, like, I get it. He's a big time singer. He's an entertainer. I get all that stuff. But why is he the focal point of this great organization? What Toronto's built up there, they're finally in a final. They really could win this thing. Who knows? And this is what we're talking about today. I don't get that at all.
It kills me about the NBA, the way that, like, and it's, I'm about to talk logistics, so just bear with me. Mm-hmm. But like, the way they set up the seats on the sideline,
yeah,
where you have fans between the bench and the scorer's table.
You can't even tell what is the bench and what is the fans.
Right, which is why, like, it's, oh, you'd think that Drake has a number and he's on the roster.
Exactly, yeah.
And it's...
Well, and the way he acts, I mean, he's running up and down the sideline. He's almost on the floor. I mean, he's literally verbally attacking these players. I mean, it looks like he's on the floor. He's a part of the moment.
He makes Spike Lee seem chill.
He does. Well, Spike Lee is a lot more chill than he is. Well,
yeah, but like back in the day, we're talking mid-90s.
It's very true.
Like Spike Lee was like a cartoon
very
on the sideline.
No, there's no question.
Well, it's very intentional. Like last series, Game 7, first time anyone has ever won a Game 7 with a buzzer beater. Kawhi Leonard did that. That's the first time in NBA history. And who's in the iconic picture on the side? It's Drake.
Yeah.
Because he came over to where Kawhi was after the shot and he crouched beside him. It's very intentional and it's pretty obnoxious, especially from a guy who bandwagons in every sport every year.
That's the other thing. Like, yeah, God.
It's every sport. He does it all the time.
But here's the thing. Do you get
thankfully all those other teams lose.
But do you argue? But do you argue with Drake? Is it Drake's fault that they're doing this? I mean, Drake is just acting the way he's going to act.
He's mugging for the cameras.
But the NBA
it's a two-way street.
But the NBA is allowing it. Number one, the NBA security is allowing him to act like that on the sidelines. Number two, he keeps. I mean, he's just it's his face. I mean, if I'm the Raptors, I'm thinking they're talking more about Drake. I mean, after that game was over, I'm not kidding you, and this is why I tweeted it that day, was after that game was over the next day, the only thing I saw video-wise was Drake. Everything was Drake. It had nothing to do with the Raptors' huge win.
Right.
The Raptors basically dismantling Golden State.
He's
doing
their
what
star.
They did. He's it. Yeah.
Not the fact that was the best team basketball in a final since
the Spurs
were there.
Very, very good call there. Very good call there. So it's just too bad, I think, for Toronto. I just think it's too bad for the Toronto Raptors. Because you look at this, this is the type of team that I think the NBA should want to rally around. This is what the NBA used to be like. You got a superstar team and you got a superstar player and you're built around that and you're winning because you're a great team instead of having to bring in 3-4 superstars to put together. This is the type of team that I would think would be that the kind of team that the NBA would want to wrap their arms around. Instead, we're talking about Drake.
Yeah.
You know, I just think that's a problem.
So I think anybody that was rooting against Milwaukee last week should have to eat their shoe.
Yeah.
Because this would be a much more palatable final if the Bucks were in it, not the Raptors.
And I honestly thought the Bucks, with all their scoring options, had a better chance at knocking off the Warriors, but the Raptors are playing so well right now. I think if you're a fan of good basketball, you just got to ignore Drake, because this team is still – they're what I've been starving for from the NBA. Sure. They're what my dad hates the NBA. He used to watch it all the time. He won't do it anymore. Sure. But he sat down and watched that whole game one because he caught a piece of game six.
Sure.
And loved the team basketball. And it's hard not to root for them. Kawhi Leonard's a stand-up guy. Pascal Siakam's a really cool story.
Well, let's be honest here. You have two teams in the East final with the two superstars that are the most easy to root for.
Oh yeah,
the Greek Freak and Kawhi. They're not self-absorbed. They're just great guys that are great team players. That's all. And they're just trying to win basketball games.
And two organizations that are built around team basketball, good team defense, moving the ball, and all around good strategy as opposed to chucking up bad shots.
655-6672 is the number to call if you want to join our conversation today. 802-655-6672, or text us on the Town Fair Tire text line. We are 101.3 The Game. This is Sports Saturday with Jeff and Austin and our good boy Aaron over here, the producer, getting it done over there, mixing all the tunes, playing all the music. That's just where I get salty with that. I can't even blame Drake. Drake is an entertainer. Drake, this is what he does. He's just going to be loud and he's going to be out there and he wants to be on television, but we just keep doing it.
He's enabling
him. We just
him.
Keep on doing it. And the NBA doesn't put their foot down to say, do not touch our coach again. He should have been, they should have been.
Any said, other fan would have been tossed.
Jail.
They would have been banned.
They would have been in jail. They would have been exactly.
Dolan's banned people for less.
Well, I mean, James Dolan's a different animal, but I'm talking about a simple game. If I'm in a basketball game and I go, if I'm in a Virginia basketball game and I go give Tony Bennett a shoulder rub, I'm never going to be allowed to go back in the JPJ again. They're going to put me in jail for a night.
You're going to need a fist first too, probably.
I mean, come on, just because he's Drake, he can just walk up and do that. Like what? I mean, as a coach, I would have been angry. Like, who do you think you are? Well, this isn't a goat show here. This is the NBA Eastern Finals, and you're walking up and giving me a massage on my back, and the NBA condoned and just says, yeah, maybe you shouldn't do that. They called this publicist the next day and said, don't do that. What does that say? I mean, just sit down and watch a game, be loud, be by, do whatever you want to do. But somebody's got to say to this guy, like, listen, man. If I was Toronto, I would say that. I'd say, come on, what are you doing?
Yeah, don't make yourself the game. Don't, like, it's you're not on the team.
Yeah, but don't you think Toronto should say, look, we love you?
They're not in a place to do it.
Why?
Because they know it. Like, Drake makes them more relevant.
Oh my! Well, you win it. I don't know. Well, that's
he's
I don't
one
know.
Of the most famous people from their that, from their then, city. Then, so
let me
I
say,
understand.
Then let me say this, and that's a real. Then that's on them. Then, I mean, I don't. That's on them. Then
that's the way marketing and stuff works.
I guess.
Now.
I guess. But I gotta tell you, if I was a Toronto Raptor, I'd just be enough with Drake. Right? Say, look, I'd say, okay, we get it, but you got to tone this down.
Especially since every time he backs a team, they choke.
We just got a text on the Town Fair Tire text line 655-6672. Rams fan Ralph said, you're right, that should not be allowed. And Triple E said they didn't toss Drake because he brings in viewers and money. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
But it is true that people who don't normally watch basketball games will watch them.
Who's going to put on a game? I want someone to call this show right now or text me that says, I put this game on with Toronto so I can watch Drake.
I don't think any of them are around here.
Tell me that. Somebody call up and tell me that you know someone that does that. Tell me that.
I'd like to think our listeners have more sense than that.
That's my point. I would think everybody would have more. So you mean people in Toronto are like, everybody, dinner's done. Get around the table. Let's go. Drake is about to be on.
It's the same. It's not even Toronto people. It's the same people who watch the Super Bowl for the halftime show.
Oh,
ooh, Drake's on TV.
Somebody tell me who you are. I want to know if somebody actually watches these basketball games to see Drake. I want to see Drake. That's what I. Oh man, I can't wait to watch Drake tonight.
They're
gonna be great.
They're people with really crappy senses of entertainment.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's just one of the things I'm annoyed
with. It's unfortunate.
It really is. But, you know, we're going to talk more about this NBA final, talk some real basketball with our good friend, NBA editor from fansided.com, Ian Levy, right after this break. Don't go anywhere.
Sports Saturday is back on 101.3 The Game.
Just to end this conversation on Drake, it's Todd just texted us on the Town Fair Tire text line. Spike is pretty animated and Jack Nicholson too, but they at least stay in the vicinity of their seat. He should not be touching coaches or players. What if every fan thought like Drake and ran down and back rubbed the coach? Just because he's Drake doesn't mean he's above the rules. And this is my best part of this tweet. He says, or this text, he says, hate the Drake. Seinfeld reference. I love that one. See, that's what I mean. That's what the greatest show of all time is, because it's still pertinent today. Ah, oh, it's a good show.
Well, it was, I mean, yes, it was the early 90s, but yeah. Like, all of Jerry Seinfeld's humor is like rooted in like the, and
it's true.
And same thing with Larry David. It's rooted in like the little idiosyncrasies of like daily life.
Very true. Very, very true. All right, let's get right to it here. We just talked a little bit about the end. We talked about the bad side of the NBA final. Let's talk about the good side with our good friend, NBA editor from fansided.com. Ian Levy joins us now on Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game, TikTok, Jewelers Guest Line. Good morning, my friend. What's happening today?
Not much. Happy to be here.
It's happy. We're happy to have you. Ian, listen, I mean, is this the matchup that I don't think it's a matchup that we expected, but wow, I think we got a good series on our hands.
Yeah, I mean, I was definitely expecting Milwaukee and Golden State, a ways back in the playoffs. And certainly after Milwaukee took those first two games in the Eastern Conference Finals, obviously Toronto was good enough to beat them. And I think they're really good enough to challenge the Warriors and, you know, give the Warriors a good run, whatever happens from here on out. But there are so many of the pieces of Toronto's plan sort of looked like they weren't working earlier in the playoffs. You know, Marc Gasol was struggling. Danny Green went through that huge shooting slump in the Eastern Conference Finals. Their depth was really looking thin without OG Anunoby, and everything's kind of come together for them. And I was really surprised how Game One went, and it looks like it's going to be a great series. I also was just listening to the Drake conversation, and just want to throw out one other thing. I don't know the exact specifics of it, but he is technically a team employee. He has a role for at least 5 years. He's been the global ambassador for the Raptors, and so I don't know exactly. You know, I don't know if he's paid. I don't know what his job description is. My guess is it's pretty vague to begin with, but there is at least this one veneer that, you know, sort of separates him from your average fan.
Then maybe it's Toronto's fault. Maybe that's in the job requirement. Maybe that's in the job history. That's what he has to do.
I got to think he's getting seats and a hall pass to act like however he wants.
That certainly seems like what it is. Yeah, and I agree. You know, the league talked to him. I think the league should take a tougher stand. And I think it's certainly on the Raptors for, with that distinction of him being a team employee and not a fan, I think it even puts the onus more on them to sort of talk to him about what's acceptable and what's not.
And end of day, I mean, again, this is probably not even Drake's fault, but the exposure he gets over what they're doing as a basketball team is amazing to me, Ian.
Yeah, it is. I mean, for somebody who doesn't exist in that, it's not my musical genre, and, you know, I'm probably a little bit older than his target demographic, but I definitely feel like I hear more about Drake the Raptors fan than Drake the musician. That's definitely how I encounter him.
Yeah, I agree with you. All right, let's talk a little more about the basketball side of thing. Is Golden State in trouble here? I mean, are they in real trouble to lose this thing?
They are. I would be surprised if the Raptors win another game like Game One, you know, where Lowry is not scoring, where Kawhi Leonard's pretty inefficient, and where Siakam, you know, Gasol, Fred VanVleet, where those guys are really carrying the scoring load. I'd be surprised if the Raptors get another game like that. But, you know, their defense has certainly shown that they can disrupt Golden State. I wouldn't expect Kawhi Leonard to play as badly as he did in Game One through the rest of the series. And then, you know, there's this sort of looming variable of Kevin Durant and DeMarcus Cousins. And, you know, obviously I think Durant raises their ceiling and certainly makes the Warriors a tougher team, but it just adds chaos. You know, he comes back. We don't know what his health is. They sort of have to accommodate him in certain ways. If he's on the floor, give him certain types of shots. And if he's not all the way healthy, and if he rushes back and is maybe 60 or 70%, they could be in a situation where, you know, they're worse off just because they have to give him shots. They have to give him minutes, and he's sort of not able to do what he normally does with those things. And same thing with DeMarcus Cousins. If they look at whatever he played in Game One, just at, you know, less than double digit minutes, I think, and if they look at him as some sort of wild card that they want to double down on, you know, they could give him a role, give him a larger role, give him more minutes as the series goes on, and that could pay off for Golden State, but it also, you know, it could be a disaster. And so I think there's a little more uncertainty on the Warriors side than we've ever seen with them in the finals before.
If Durant doesn't come back or misses, you know, upwards of maybe it's game five or six before he gets back, just spinning it out, how much more manageable does that make this series for Toronto? I mean, it boggles my mind, like, that all of a sudden, you know, they get past the Bucks the way they did, and then, you know, the Warriors minus Durant, Toronto could be the world champs. That's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's where we are. It's I think that the Durant thing is so complex a question. I think I can't remember who put it this way, but I think having Durant on the floor raises the floor for the Warriors. You know, the Warriors on their worst night are much, much better when Durant is on the floor. It just gives them the ability to survive all sorts of things, to survive all sorts of defensive matchups or somebody else having a tough night. They know that they can sort of throw the ball to him in the mid post. They can go to him in isolation and he can get, you know, he can get buckets without, you know, without all of the motion and energy and you know, all the other things that sort of work and make them so dangerous when the offense is focused around Curry and Clay and Draymond Green and those pick and rolls. But I also think the Warriors are probably better. Their ceiling is probably higher when they're playing this style, you know, the style that they played pre-Durant, where things are more focused around the pick and roll, or where things are more focused around movement and you know, getting shots at the three-point line. And so it's kind of a trade-off, and you don't know, you know, you don't always know what's going to turn out. I think without Durant, the depth is a real concern for them, especially with, you know, Iguodala not all the way healthy. Sean Livingston's probably playing a lot more minutes than they were hoping he'd be playing at this point. And you know, they have to rely on Jonas Jerebko and Quinn Cook and Alfonso McKinney to give them some key minutes. And yeah, it's risky, but you know, at the same time, we could see them come out scorching hot in game two. You know, Marc Gasol and Fred VanVleet go totally cold, and you know, they get the road split, and things look totally different going into game three.
Well, saying that, how important is this for Golden State? I mean, you kind of feel like, you know, we saw what, and it wasn't that important for Toronto to lose the first two to Milwaukee. They were able to come back and kind of take control of the series. Is this game, if Toronto finds a way to win this one, is Golden State in deep trouble, or are they still okay?
I think they're probably still okay. I think the Warriors are one of those teams. My sense of them from the outside is that nothing really fazes them, that they trust their talent as much as maybe any team we've seen in recent memory. And so I don't think going down 0-2 is going to faze them in the slightest. I think if we looked at this, you know, if we looked at this series in reverse, hypothetically, if Golden State had home court advantage, they had the first two games at Oakland and they won the first two games, I think that would put an enormous psychological weight on Toronto, given their, you know, playoff struggles the past few years. So I think that would be, you know, the inverse situation would be totally, totally different. But I think, you know, Toronto wins the first two games, Golden State goes home. I don't think their confidence is shaken at all. And I think, you know, the odds shifting is really only, you know, them having lost two games as opposed to them giving up any sort of momentum or anything like that.
So is it safe to say that this is a more important game for Toronto, maybe, even though they're up 1-0?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, that would be my sense of it. I think, my sense from the outside is that is confidence, momentum, those kinds of things are so much more important to Toronto in this series. You know, they have to not just win each game, but they sort of, each game is a statement that they belong here, that they're, you know, sort of a viable contender, you know, that they can play at Golden State's level, that they're, you know, not going to just collapse and you know, let these playoff ghosts from the past, you know, catch up with them. And so, yeah, I think they're fighting that as well as the Warriors in every game. And so, you know, any slip up, I think, sort of has greater ramifications for Toronto than it does for Golden State.
What would Toronto winning do for Kawhi Leonard? Like, because he's pretty much the most underappreciated star in the game. Mm-hmm. And I mean, where does he go? Like, where does his star go, his legacy go, if you know, he can lead this team to a championship?
I mean, in terms of the present, you know, I think there's sort of a limit on how much of a sort of a marketable star he is, just because his personality is kind of flat, you know, because he's not sort of the most engaging, gregarious guy. You know, I don't think his place in the constellation of stars in the league, I don't think that changes a whole lot. But you know, he's already probably a Hall of Famer, even if he never wins another ring, you know, just based on his accomplishments to this point. And, I think this really builds his legacy, you know, watching him lead two different teams, to a title, you know, his Defensive Player of the Year accolades. He certainly could have been in the MVP conversation this year if he wanted to, you know, if Toronto, if he and Toronto had sort of agreed to, you know, max out his regular season minutes, to not sit him for load management, you know, to not sort of, carefully, you know, manage his rest to make sure he was as fresh as possible for the playoffs. He could have been right there in the MVP conversation as well. And so, I think we're seeing him sort of shake off whatever residual negative reputation was left from how things ended in San Antonio. And I think, you know, we're back to, he's one of the top five players in the game, you know, going forward until we see age start to catch up with him. And yeah, I think his long-term legacy, I think he's really creeping up the list. And, you know, depending on what happens over the next couple of years, maybe you have to start talking about him with, you know, with Wade and Kobe and LeBron and you know, as among, you know, some of the best wing players ever.
Well, I'll tell you what, so going forward here, do we feel like this is Golden State's to win? You still comfortable with that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm still kind of shell-shocked by how game three went, just that the Raptors won, but that they were sort of in control from start to finish, you know, that they weathered, a third quarter. You know, I expected the Warriors to come out of halftime and just kind of put together some run and sort of blow them out and regain control. And that never happened. The fact that they, you know, kept Golden State at an arm's length and didn't let it, you know, come down to a single possession game at the end where they sort of needed, you know, a fluke or execution to win, that was more surprising to me than anything else. And so, I think Golden State's probably still a slight favorite just with that Durant wild card hanging out there. But, we're inching closer to 50-50, and I'm at a place where almost nothing would surprise me. It wouldn't surprise me to see Toronto come out and win game two. It wouldn't surprise me to see the Warriors come out and blow them off and, you know, win by 30 either.
So before I let you go, Zion's going to be the number one pick. It's going to go to New Orleans. Do we see that organization? Is Anthony Davis definitely gone still, or with this addition of potentially bringing in Zion, does that maybe keep him there?
I mean, my sense, you know, from what's been reported is that Davis probably still is going to leave, that it's, you know, that it's not just about winning. It's about being in that place and being in that organization, and he's ready for something new. But I think whatever the Pelicans get for Anthony Davis, you know, whether it's the Celtics package, you know, whether it's the Lakers package, whether it's the Knicks package, whether it's, you know, somebody else sort of coming out of nowhere with a trade offer that we're not seeing right now, I think they're going to be in a really, really good position. I think Zion Williamson is, a franchise-changing star. I think he's going to be so exciting to watch. I think it's going to change the perception of the organization. And, you know, maybe they move on from Drew Holiday as well. But I think there are ways to swing this where, you know, they're not that far away from returning to the playoffs. You know, if they get a package that's built around somebody like Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown from Boston, where they're getting a guy who already has, you know, 2 or 3 years under their belt, you know, that Drew Holiday, Zion Williamson, you know, whatever else they can sort of swing and put together, I don't think they're that far away from being a playoff team again.
Ian Levy, you're the best, buddy. We'll talk to you down the road. Thanks for taking the time.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Boy, if you're a Celtic fan, do you like that? Little package there for Anthony Davis.
That'd be wild.
That would be very interesting and might change the dynamic of what's going on in Boston, too.
Yeah.
All right, take a quick break. When we come back, it's Hot or Not. Don't go anywhere.
You better crank up that AC because Sports Saturday is about to bring the heat. It's Hot or Not on 101.3 The Game.
You know what that noise is. You know when Nelly starts to play his beat. What do you got today, kiddo?
This is Hot or Not, brought to you by Superb Cupcakes in Williston. Stop by Superb Cupcakes for the best. Stop by Superb Cupcakes in the Taft Corner Shopping Center. You have to know where to go. for the best cupcakes around. They will not disappoint, offering over 100 flavors of regular and mini cupcakes that are made from scratch daily. There is no box mix at Superb. Make your day superb.
And I'm just going to say this. I mean, they are the best bar none cupcakes I have ever had in my life. And they last a long time, which I think says something, because they're all homemade. This isn't like, there's no preservatives in these things. It's not like, you know, you're buying them at a grocery store. They're not Drake's cupcakes. You know what I mean? All right. These are homemade cupcakes. And I've told you, I bring them in all the time. You know, you'll have them the next day and they're as delicious as they are the day they bake them.
Aaron read that last week. I thought Lauren was just going to get up and leave a segment early.
Oh, I'm telling you, if you haven't had one of their cupcakes, you really are missing out. So Taft Corner Shopping Center in Williston, go check them out. They are the best.
To answer Lauren's question from last week, they do serve red velvet cupcakes. And they're delicious. Oh, yeah, my dad brought a couple home.
Oh. They're in. Red velvet is a mild flavor. You know what I mean? Like, you think of red velvet, you think that's a cool flavor. That's like basic there when you look at the crazy flavors that they have there. It's insane. They are the best. And by the way, their salted caramel cupcake was ranked number one cupcake in New England.
Ooh.
I'm not lying to you. I mean, and this is the problem with them. Joe and Hannah, who I love to death, but they don't want to talk about themselves. You know?
Trust the process.
No, I don't need to say anything. I'm like, will you please put a banner outside that says we have the number one cupcake in Vermont? Please, let's go. Anyway.
Well, we'll tell them.
I'll
do it.
I'll tell them. I got you, Joe and Han. I got you.
Speaking of number one, the Raptors will win the finals in five games or less.
No. They're still playing the Warriors. This has, I mean, it's at least six.
Yeah, I say no either. I think the Golden State's going to win in five. Oh, that's what I think. I think this is Golden State's to lose. I think that it was a perfect storm. I think you saw a lot of things happen for Toronto in game one that I don't think you're going to see. I don't know if those players can be that consistent against this team. And like Coach Kerr said at the end of the game, they finally have some real tape on this basketball team. We'll see. I think we're going to see a different Warriors team this tonight.
Okay.
It's tonight, right? Yeah, it's tonight. Tomorrow night.
It's the NBA. They take like a week between the games.
I was going to say, my God, these games, don't you play the next day?
Well, they usually drag the playoffs out through like the first half of June.
It's 2 to 3 days between games.
That's crazy. Whew. Well, Drake's got to get rested.
Yeah, he wears himself out.
Well, the other day, a young child was hit by a baseball going into foul territory.
Houston.
A very sad story. Mike Golic and Trey Wingo weighed in on it.
If a woman dying in the stands is not enough to convince Major League Baseball and its 30 teams to expand netting up and out, what will it take? The death of a child? Is that where we really want to be? Is that where Major League Baseball really wants to be?
Listen, we know a lot of times in life, not just in sports, safety measures are taken after a tragic event. Then there's the reaction instead of the being proactive.
Correct.
You're reactive, unfortunately, only after a tragedy. I don't know what more needs to happen. You gave the number, Mike. Over 1,000 people hit with a ball or a bat. To me, this is just a no-brainer. This shouldn't even be bringing up the argument of it's hard to see through. You'll get used to it.
Exactly.
You'll get used to it. And I mean, is it worth what's going on and people getting hit? It's just not. This should be the easiest conversation of all time.
So Mike Golic says putting up more netting in the MLB parks is a no-brainer.
First of all, it's like Trey Wingo trying to be somebody he's not. I love his show. It's like, you know, all of a sudden he's yelling in the microphone and he's this passionate guy. Oh my God, what a phony. Anyway, yeah, I think putting up more netting in the NBL parks is nobody. Yeah, I think it's hot. I was at a Yankee game in the mid 90s when Raul Mondesi hit a line drive at batting practice and I watched a guy's finger get basically dislocated. I saw the finger go the other way from a line drive. I mean, look, these guys are big, they're strong, and the balls come in, they're humming, and obviously you don't want to see anybody get hurt. The biggest issue I think that baseball has and that the fans have is that baseball has been doing this for a long time and those seats are very expensive. And I think in the beginning, the mindset is, I'm paying thousands of dollars for these seats. I don't want to be obstructed by anything. The truth is, it's not going to obstruct you. And I think truth be told, with where we're at in baseball today and athletes today, you got to do it to protect people.
Well, and not only that, you like the way fans are, like semi-distracted with their phones.
Of course. Very good point.
Not paying attention.
Well, and when you're sitting in those seats, like when you're sitting that low, I mean, there's so much to look at besides the game anyway. I mean, you're looking at, you know, you're getting your food brought to you. You've got screens all over the place. There's all kinds of things going on. You're looking at the big screen. They've got all kinds of things going on up there. But I think the cell phone point is a great one, Austin. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's a no-brainer. I think you got to do it.
Oh, man. It is no big deal that OBJ is absent from OTAs.
Oh, okay. Let me just go first. Like, this is... This is not.
I'll clear out the
lane. This is not okay. And again, this is me patting Dave Gettleman on the back again. This is me getting on my soapbox and saying this is exactly who Odell Beckham Jr. is. Who's giving Odell Beckham Jr. advice? Hey, Odell, here's the deal. You were traded from the New York Giants, one of the greatest franchises in the NFL. They paid you a bunch of money. They're going to eat most of it. They're going to send you to Cleveland because here's what we're going to do because you're not a good leader because this is what you've proved in New York. So you're going to go to Cleveland. You're going to tell, oh, I didn't want to play in New York because they didn't really want to win, which is just crock of crap. Then you have your OTAs. You're in a new organization with a rookie quarterback, a brand new coach, and you don't show up? I mean, Odell Beckham Jr. is exactly who he is, a very talented kid, but I'm telling you right now, you know what the biggest problem is going to be in Cleveland before it's over? We're going to see a locker room fight between Baker Mayfield and Odell Beckham Jr. because you know what? Baker Mayfield's not Eli Manning. Eli Manning is a passive guy. Baker Mayfield won't stand for this garbage. And I'm going to tell you right now, an organization that's coming and a team that could win a Super Bowl in a couple of years, if not this year, won't because of Odell Beckham Jr.
This is a big deal. So by proximity to Jeff.
Right. Because I'm standing now.
Yeah. He's scalding over there.
Oh, I'm angry at him.
Also, when are you and Gettleman doing vacation to sometime
soon? I love
soon?
Gettleman. I love what he's doing with the Giants. I can't believe that people don't see it. I think people are starting to see it though. I think you're starting to see what he's doing with the Giants.
Did you ever hear the Gettleman promo we had out?
No. I probably won't like it though.
Oh, I basically said that he's a cool GM, but he's not Bill Belichick, so he needs to stop acting like it.
Oh, I see.
Okay. Anyway, Freddie Kitchens was asked how much Odell has missed at OTAs, and from the sound of it, he agrees with you guys.
Odell next week.
I just want to see him.
The last time
we out on last
a lot. Dolphins.
Try to be Freddie Kitchens. Be Freddie Kitchens for 1 minute. First time being the head coach, the team's got all this expectation, they got all this talent, you just trade for Odell Beckham Jr., you're trying to implement what you're trying to do as an organization, your franchise wide receiver, the new guy's coming in there, and he doesn't show up for OTAs? Give me a break, Odell Beckham Jr. What is wrong with you?
Basically, this is how bad it's gotten. When mini camp started, people were asking Freddie how he felt about OBJ not showing up, and he said it's not a big deal, he'll be here when it matters, and OBJ's been so negligent that this guy's completely turned his tune. Oh, he's missing a lot.
But let me just say this. How many times did you hear the Giants personnel say the exact same thing over all the years? I mean, right. You know, oh, it's okay. He's not here. We know, he's going to be here when it matters. And what happens? I mean, it's just, even if it doesn't matter if he's there, and it may not matter for his success at Cleveland, it's terrible optics for a guy that needs some good optics if he's going to be the player he wants to be.
Yeah, he's not making the right moves.
Exactly.
Especially if you're going to talk trash about another stand-up organization saying that they don't want to win. You better act like you want to win more than anything else
in
the world.
No question.
Mm-hmm.
The return of the Yankee stars that have been hurt will damage the team's current momentum.
You know, I'm in and out of this, but I'm going to say you got to say hot. I mean, for example, not Judge, but a guy like Stanton coming back that brings a lot of strikeouts to the room. The reason the Yankees have been so successful is these guys put bat on ball and they grind.
Right.
You know, I mean, you got to sit somebody. Didi Gregorius is going to be back in a week, and right now that Yankee infield, I mean, Gio Urshela, it could be the all-star third baseman. He's unbelievable. DJ LeMahieu is the Yankees MVP right now. Voit has been a big part of that offense at first base. I mean, where are you going to play these guys? And then you wonder if Didi starts out slow, you know, and you sit Voit for a while because you want to keep LeMahieu on. You know, these guys, it's hard to keep guys sharp. I think it's something that it's going to be interesting for the Yankees going forward because this team right now is dynamic and doing some very special things.
So they were 6-9, and they've gone 31-10 since then.
It's crazy.
That, like,
without Aaron Judge, without Giancarlo Stanton, without Severino, without Betances, I mean, without Aaron Hicks for most of it.
Yeah.
That's a big deal.
I'm hot on this too. Like, you can't, a team that's playing that well, unless they start to dip right before those guys come back.
Sure.
You can't scrap that.
And you wonder though, Boone has not been afraid to sit guys. Look, you're not getting it done, you're going to sit. I mean, Boone has shown that. I mean, he's really shown some metal here. So we'll see how it plays out. It's a good problem to have, but I think it could be a problem for the Yankees.
And if you think about it, it's kind of what happened to the Celtics. They had a hot hand last year. They tried to add their stars back in, and it didn't work.
Very good point.
All right, we're going to skip 5 because it's a little bit silly. It was supposed to be the Warriors are better without Durant, but
yeah,
you can't say that the Warriors are going to be better without one of the best, one of the most unguardable athletes in the history of the sport.
Yep.
So we're moving on. The Red Sox will be sellers at the trade deadline.
At the current rate, yes.
You want to elaborate on that?
They're 500. If you get to midseason, you're still 500. You're not going to make the playoff. Like, no.
Okay, I'm going to say not. I'll say only because if they are still at 500 by the time the trade deadline comes around, they're still going to be in it. I mean, there's not a lot of there's not very many good baseball teams out there right now. You're very top heavy. I feel like the Red Sox rotation is still one of the best in baseball. Their offense is still one of the best in baseball. The problem that the Red Sox has is their bullpen. And I don't understand how Dave Dombrowski did nothing in the offseason to look to shore that thing up. It was a problem last year with guys like Kelly and guys like Kimbrel.
Yeah.
And now they're both gone. They were your steadiest guys. I know Kimbrel struggled late in the season, and we get all that stuff. But I got to tell you, Red Sox fans right now, tell me, would you like to have Craig Kimbrel closing games for you right now? How do you not bring that guy back? I mean, you talk about a dumpster fire, that Red Sox back end of the rotation, that bullpen is. That's a dumpster fire. Mm. Nobody's intimidated of those arms. Nobody. And this is the defending world champions. It's interesting to me to see what they're doing, but I can't imagine them being sellers. And they'll make another run. They just had a period where they were.
Right.
They have one of the best records in baseball in May.
I just think the way the Red Sox operate, if they're not like within that, like, you know, maybe 10 or whatever game striking distance, the sound business decision might be to sell a couple, ride out the season, acquire some prospects, and then you're essentially reloading for a different look at 2020.
Are Red Sox fans ready to do that? Are the Red Sox fans ready to give up on this?
We got enough championships. I'm happy.
Oh my God,
right now.
You arrogant Boston fans are annoying. See, look at that. The Red Sox, it used to be fun to argue with you, Red Sox, because you get angry. Now it's like, we don't win, whatever.
Yeah.
We'll just reload. Like, I can take a few years off. I got the Patriots starting in a couple
months. Reset, build some momentum.
I cannot imagine the Boston Red Sox being sellers because I don't look at any of their players as problems. Like the year they had got rid of Beckett and Crawford and those guys where they had to get rid of those guys because they were so over the threshold. Best part of last night's game for me, there was Yankee, before we go, I have to say, I was watching there's nothing better than watching the Nesson guys when the Red Sox lose if you're a Yankee fan. It doesn't happen a whole lot lately. And Jim Rice got on the air last night and said to Tom Caron, well, you know, the Yankees spend so much money. Look at all the money they spend on all these players. You know, when their big stars come back, they're going to have all these problems. And Tom Caron said, well, Jimby, you know, that used to be the case, but the Red Sox have the highest payroll in baseball now.
Right. Yeah.
And they just, you know, I was like, oh my God, Jim Rice, you got owned, buddy. I saw that. It was awesome stuff. All right. That's Hot or Not for another week. Great job, Aaron, as usual. And Austin, you know, you always keep me sane here over here.
I'm trying.
I'm yelling, screaming. Then there's the calming voice of Austin Danforth over here.
I got a hand on your belt, pulling you back from the ledge.
Yep. I appreciate all that. Especially when it comes to Odell Beckham Jr. I'm so glad he's not a Giant anymore. I don't care if he scores 20 touchdowns this year. I'm so glad he's not a Giant.
But seriously, when you and Gettleman set up that vacation, let me know where you're going.
I'll get some selfies.
Yeah.
Because you know how I am with tweeting and all that stuff. I'm good at that.
Right.
You know what I mean?
No, but I'll need to get some coverage for.
Get some coverage. Maybe sometime we have Dave Gettleman come in and do the show with us.
You guys could hold hands on that side of the.
Fair enough. I love what he's doing. And then I can say things like, okay, yes. We'll be right back.
I hate to say it, but the show is almost over. But before we go, we'll get the Brass Monkeys bumping and get you ready for your sports weekend. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game. My bad, guys.
And he found it.
He figured it out. I had all the faith in the world in you, Aaron. Hey, what a show today, boys, huh? That was a lot of fun, right?
Yeah, it was.
Talk some Bruins and Blues. Got to talk to the Yes Network's Jack Curry about the new book by David Cohn, Full Count. It's supposed to be unbelievable.
You lit up like a Christmas tree for that
interview.
I love
Jack Curry. He's my guy. And I tell you, one of the kindest guys that I've ever met. And I've met a few of these guys. I've talked to him a lot, you know, that I've been doing the show for 4 years. But Jack Curry, I met personally. What a nice guy. And this guy's a busy man. So, you know, getting these guys on is really cool. And then obviously Ian Levy, our other good friend, NBA editor from fansided.com. I don't know if there's a better NBA mind in terms of what he sees every single day than Ian Levy. So great to talk to him about that. So yeah, good show today, man. Let's get to the Green City Garage poll question. Remember, Green City Garage located at 49B Commerce Ave, Unit 5. Phone number 802-651-9299. Get Chris Wallace on your car, man. He'll take good care of it. The Green City Garage poll question today was, what is the country's best rivalry in sports? And A, Yankees, Red Sox. B, Michigan or Ohio State in college football. That's where Austin goes. He's a big Michigan guy. Go Blue.
Yeah.
Yep. Great follow-up there. UNC and Duke in college basketball, and then another big college football rivalry, Alabama-Auburn. Aaron, what is the final result, my man?
Red Sox versus Yankees wins with 73%. Yep. UNC versus Duke comes in second with 15%. Michigan State versus Ohio State with 12%. And Alabama versus Auburn finishes with a nice 0%.
Okay, let me a little correction there. It's not Michigan State. Yeah. That's a big mistake.
That's my bad.
That's a big mistake for both sides. My brother-in-law graduated from Michigan State. When my mother-in-law would be like, oh, here's a Michigan shirt. They give that to Joe. And Joe is like, you put that in the toilet.
Right. And you add the state onto Michigan. And I'm just, in my mind, I'm putting my fingers in my ears. And I'm just going,
la, 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 la.
The victor's valiant.
I'm not surprised Yankees Red Sox win. I think that is, I mean.
Around here.
Know, around here. But I think it's big nationally, too, don't you think?
Well, I think it's one of the oldest rivalries in the country.
It's, you know, yeah. in every generation has had a Yankee Red Sox moment.
Right.
There's been a big Yankee Red Sox fight for the last 50 years, somewhere along the way.
Yeah.
Greatest Yankee Red Sox fight in your opinion?
My lifetime, it's Pedro and Zimmer. That was good.
I would say that was a good one. Yeah. That was definitely good. And how about Manny Ramirez in that, by the way? Like, the ball wasn't even near him. He's freaking out with David. He just wanted to fight.
Yeah.
Talk about two roid rage fight. That would have been something. Roger Clemens against Manny Ramirez.
Yeah.
Ooh, they should have let that go. That
throw the needles something. Out when they get together.
Oh, yeah. Cha-cha-da-da-da. That was good.
Allegedly.
Yeah, exactly.
Real quick, the reason I was distracted coming into the segment, I want to throw a big shout out to Jeff Paul for his 10th year anniversary.
Oh, thank you.
With Romantos.
Yeah, man. Thank you very much. I appreciate you saying that. And I'm not trying to plug the restaurant, but we've been 10 years at our Taft Corners location in Williston. In June 1st, 2009, when I did that, I was scared out of my mind. Never worked in a restaurant in my life and have an opportunity. But the staff that it's really been more than it's not me. It's my staff and the people that have worked for us throughout the years and have helped us. I mean, this isn't just our day. It's our staff's day as well. So we're really proud of them and happy for them. And thanks for giving me the shout out, man.
He didn't do it, I was going to.
Yeah, well, I appreciate
my
that.
Question for you.
Yeah.
How many pizzas have you guys churned out in 10 years?
Wow, that's a great question. And I tried to do the homework on the well over six. A lot.
And very quick, there was technically 1 minute left on the Twitter poll when we finished it.
Yeah.
Someone at the buzzer voted for Auburn versus Alabama.
There you go. They're on the board. Good
token
for them.
Vote.
Hey, listen, keep it here all weekend, guys. We got Yankees, Red Sox all weekend. Our sister station's got NASCAR. You got the Bruins. You got basketball. You got so much going on here. And don't forget, listen to the boys every week, Monday through Friday, 3 to 6. It's The Huddle with Arnie, Rich, and Brady. Those guys got you covered throughout the week, and we got you on the weekend. We're Sports Saturday. We'll see you next week. For my boy Aaron, my good friend Austin, who's heading out right now to be covering some more high school sports, check out your teams this week, guys. Root for these kids. They've been working hard all year. It's playoff time in Vermont. You got to love it. We'll see you next week.